Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And I almost forgot to say my name. We're joined today by Joshua Smith. Hi. For questionable internet opinions. Yeah. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, you know?
Yeah, we've just been watching Steven Universe music videos and crying.
Uh-huh. Like the three of us together. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's true.
We made tofu scramble.
Yeah. So good.
Well, the trick is Dijon mustard.
Yeah.
Dijon mustard is where it's at. Yeah. Mix that in with a tofu, and then I very rarely use Daiya vegan cheese, but for this I do, because it adds just the right kind of fat and kind of cheddary. And then a little bit of like oil or vegan butter or whatever you've got.
And then, what we did to soup it up this time, well, first of all, we deglazed it with switchel.
For any new listeners.
All right.
Switchel is my drink of choice.
Jesus Christ.
It's a very strong ginger brew. But it's basically brewed ginger plus like lemon juice and maple syrup and apple cider vinegar. It's
one of these days you're going to post the recipe on our Scoppy page, aren't you?
Yeah.
If someone asks for it, I will gladly. But like I'm a like only if demand asks for it, you know?
All right.
We'll wait for the tidal wave of people being like, oh, God, I need to know about Switchel.
We need Switchel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for that.
Well, I think you were going to mention the sausage.
Oh, God. So we put tofurkey andouille sausage because I had like a bougie stroke of genius at this wonderful little store in Milwaukee called River West Co-op. They have amazing like meat substitute stuff, kind of like top of the line, like it's hard to find it, like the stuff that they have at River West, it's hard to find anywhere else. Like they've got kind of different vegan cheese options and like really good meat stuff, and they have like good microwave dinners. Anyway,
well, they also have good stuff that isn't like kind of the faux stuff, you know what I mean? Like they have a lot of things that are, they have a lot of organic produce there. They've got a lot of just like good like bean options. They have like four rows of that Bob's Red Mill brand of just like different wheat products.
And you can also get like bulk stuff.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah,
no, which is great. So they do have a lot of the one option of the faux if you want to kind of mimic things that you've had in the past. But they also have just good solid like
grocery absolutely
store stuff.
But it's all like it's all natural. It's generally higher end, mostly organic. You can also, if you're like a, if you do crafts, you can also like sell your stuff there. Like they always have like locally made jewelry.
And you can become a member. They do like the co-op system, which is like super relevant to like socialism. Not relevant, but like a cousin to like socialism ideals and stuff.
It's collectivism.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It's fucking, I love collectivism as a concept. I think it's fucking brilliant.
And so I paid $20 for the year, and I get 20% off of everything I buy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I also get, there's another co-op in Milwaukee called Outpost.
And there's a lot of different locations too.
Yeah. And I also get a discount at Outpost through this. And then so after 5 years of paying $20 a year, or however you want to split it up, once you pay $100 in membership dues, you're a lifelong member of the co-op.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a great deal.
I know.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And
if you volunteer at the place,
you
get another 10% off.
And a free meal.
And a free meal. And they have a little cafe in place. Have you been to... did you go
to... Yeah, we went together.
Yeah, they have the little cafe in there that you can go up. There's like a deli counter and you can get all these really great sandwiches.
Oh, God,
they have
the
best vegan French toast and the best vegan pancakes I've ever had in my life.
Oh, we missed breakfast, but I got a vegan barbecue sandwich that was just so good.
For Valentine's Day last year, I got Joe Riggenbach, actually, to ride his bike over to River West Co-op, bribe one of the workers to let him look at their recipe book.
Really?
and he took a picture of the pancake recipe, and I that was my Valentine's Day gift, is that I bought Joe a bottle of liquor.
And this was for your ex-boyfriend or
yeah no No, it was for me. I'm telling this extremely romantic story 2 feet away from my boyfriend's face.
Yeah,
and it was for my ex. I bribed someone to bribe a co-op employee to steal their community source recipes.
It's incredible.
Do we still have that somewhere?
It's on my mom's fridge. Right where it belongs.
An hour and a half away from you making pancakes.
It was like put on her fridge and like baby's first espionage.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
My daughter bribed someone. I'm so proud.
I'm so proud of her. This is the recipe she has no right to have. Anyway,
well, we've got a couple of really great topics planned for this questionable internet opinions. I know one of them is that last night at Opera on Tap, one of our newer listeners came up to me and was like, oh my God, I have so many thoughts about a few of your episodes. And I really have want you guys to talk about some recent events and stuff. So she actually wrote into the show. So we have our first listener mail today. I also know that you wanted to talk about something that like, kind of segues into, because we immediately forwarded to Josh, like, oh my God, we have listener mail.
Yeah, well, which is so exciting. Please write things in. We love it. It's fantastic. Oh, I think we're all so excited about this. So yesterday I was doing some work. I know, I have a cat on me. She's very cute. Yesterday I was doing
sleeping.
I know.
Oh, baby.
I was working out of the Oak Park Library yesterday, I would occasionally hop onto my Facebook. And for some reason, it was like a monumental day in my Facebook feed for like white male fuckery, I guess is the best way to put it. And
I love the word fuckery.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. It's a really good word. And I just saw, so I have a friend who's, he's biracial and I'm not sure what.
Yeah.
But you know, he is. And he was saying, hey, you know, white people, it's basically not yours to decide what's racist. And it got into, I was so surprised, I shouldn't be surprised, but I was surprised by how many white people were very upset by that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I butted in because I'm nosy. And I was like, hey, I tried to explain, like, hey, you know, racism, homophobia, and sexism are about marginalization.
Right.
And if you're not marginalized, people can be prejudiced against you. Like, I can say I fucking hate straight people, and that's not like heterophobic, I guess, because I'm not marginalizing them because I can't. I'm not in a place to do that, but it is a prejudice, right?
Yeah.
And I tried to explain that, and some people got it, but most of them didn't, and it was just a complete nightmare. Mm. And I think that kind of segues into our listener mail because it's talking about experiences that you don't know about, mm-hmm. kind of is what that got me thinking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to read the mail?
I do. Let me unlock my phone. Do, 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 do. Pulling it up. All right. It is from Lily Guerrero, who is a fabulous soprano in the Chicago area.
Mm-hmm. She's saying the I am the wife of Mao Zedong aria. And Josh,
I'm obsessed now. I can't stop listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I wanted a recording of Lily singing it. I loved it.
We didn't record it.
We didn't record it.
I am sad that I was unable to be at that performance last night because I was at a rehearsal, but, you know, such is life. But, so, here is Lily's email. Would love to hear y'all chat about this. Just so you're familiar with the story, here are 2 separate views. So this is in reference to Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Please tell me, like, listeners, if I said that correctly.
I think it was mostly correct. Wait, hold on, let me. It's Chimamanda Ngozi. So you say the N.
Ngozi
Adichie.
Adichie, okay. Chimamanda Ngozi Ngozi. Okay, so
she's known as a writer. She wrote the book.
I'm going to interrupt you. Just for ease, she signs her Facebook posts CNA.
Hmm.
Can we call her CNA?
Sure.
Just so I don't sound like a complete moron when we're discussing this. So this is in regards to an interview that CNA did on BBC regarding her new book. And she made a statement about the struggle of trans women versus the struggle of women. And that was her initial statement.
Yes, that was her wording.
Women versus trans women. So Lily sent us two articles. One of them was taking CNA to task pretty intensely. And the other one was kind of like extolling the power of saying, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
the first one was really highlighting Laverne Cox's response mm-hmm. to it.
Yes.
Which, let's read Adichie's quote.
Actually.
Want to finish reading Lily's.
Yeah.
So here's the rest of Lily's email. To be honest, I think that she has good intentions. However, I am a very biased observer. I have read all of her works, and it speaks to me as a cis hetero woman of color. That, unintentionally, is her best audience. So my question is, one, why are we asking a cis hetero woman about trans women? Is she allowed to have an opinion about their story if she isn't part of it? Which goes right back to what you were saying. How does being an ally in this situation shine a positive light on all parties involved? What if she had said, I don't know enough about this topic to speak about it? Would she have been raked through the coals for not picking up the trans ally flag and running with it when she had the platform to do so? And her second question is, Chimamanda is a prominent, highly regarded intellectual feminist in the POC communities. When she fails publicly. Meanwhile, civilians who have said something transphobic can quietly learn from their mistakes and grow. Do some of the outcries of, she's not a real feminist, seem valid? Is she not allowed to make mistakes if she is in the public eye? And then she said, love your podcast, keep it up. And
thanks, Lily.
So, these are incredible questions.
Yes.
And I am so excited to talk about them.
Yeah.
Me too.
Do we want to give a little more background?
Yeah, let's read Chimamanda's quote.
So this is what Adichie said. I think the whole problem of gender in the world is about our experiences. It's not about how we wear our hair or whether we have a vagina or a penis. It's about the way the world treats us. And I think if you've lived in the world as a man with the privileges that the world accords to men and then sort of change gender, it's difficult for me to accept that then we can equate your experience with the experience of a woman who has lived from the beginning as a woman and who has not been accorded these privileges that men are.
All right.
So, and then the other part that the anti-Adichie article brings up is they quote Laverne Cox's Twitter, where Laverne Cox replied directly to it, saying, one.
Yeah, and this one isn't complete, so I'm going to pull up the rest of it.
Sure, and then I'll read the first two, and then okay. As you pull them. I was talking to my twin brother today about whether he believes I had male privilege growing up. I was a very feminine child, though I was assigned male at birth. My gender was constantly policed. I was told I acted like a girl and was bullied and shamed for that.
Gender exists on a spectrum, and the binary narrative which suggests that all trans women transition from male privilege erases a lot of experiences and isn't intersectional. So that, I think, is the main, you know, the mainstream, pro-trans, that I would say is that community's response.
Yeah.
Is and that she's not being intersectional, and it diminishes the struggles that trans women experience.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's important, too, that even the hard anti-Adichie article closes with saying all of this isn't to discredit or criticize Adichie's other prominent mm-hmm. works. Mm-hmm. She's certainly done a lot in the service of feminism and women in our time, but like anybody else in this world, it's important for us to acknowledge our blind spots and cop to what we may not know. That is, after all, the point, isn't it? We're supposed to be learning from each other, right?
So what we're going to do at the end of this, we're going to post pretty much, I think that with the post of the episode, we're also going to post the two articles.
Sure. Yeah, great. That sounds great.
Just so that everybody can Because what I would also love is to open this up to a discussion, whether, you know, it's through email, through a Facebook post.
Just yeah, even commenting on the Facebook.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, all of that said, I think that it is important that, you know, as the article did, that we, you know, pretty much acknowledge that her works are must reads.
Sure.
For any discussion of feminism.
Yeah.
She's done so much for women of color, not to mention the fact that she's from Nigeria, which has had some civil rights issues. And she is definitely an LGBTQ ally because she is a prominent, you know, she is outspoken in terms of the LGBTQ issues in Nigeria. So that, you know, all of that said, her initial her comment was definitely problematic.
Oh God, yes. I think could you pull up? You were reading to me a clarification
you made earlier.
Yeah.
And I think that before we even continue, I'd love to have that so we could just talk about that fact too.
She said, "Perhaps I should have said trans women are trans women and cis women are cis women." And all are women. Why are all these ads popping up?
Except I have that issue with
cis
this.
Is not an organic part of my vocabulary and would probably not be understood by a majority of people. Because saying trans and cis acknowledges that there is a distinction between women born female and women who transition without elevating one or the other, which was my point.
So basically what she's saying, what she meant to say,
yes,
is that the struggle of...
Sorry, there was a technical error. We moved the computer. I moved the computer, and it unplugged the input. So, sorry about it. Maureen was just in the middle of a thought.
Yes,
we just read the quote.
Yeah. So, basically, what she's saying is that her initial statement of, you know, women versus trans women. What she meant was cis women, but she didn't want to say cis women, I guess.
Yeah.
Which that is also something I don't fully understand.
Well, here's my problem with that statement, where she said that, you know, a lot of people, like my followers wouldn't, my readers wouldn't understand that term, but isn't that the ideal time to educate them?
I agree.
I don't really see an excuse for not saying, well, I think what I meant to, you know, well, cis women and trans women, and here's what cis woman means, I think would have been the most powerful way an ally could have tackled that.
Yeah, statement? And that actually brings me to a point that we identified, is that the interviewer's initial question was a loaded question.
Well, you're pulling that up, or you got it pretty much.
So the context of the comment was a UK Channel 4 reporter asked, "Does it matter how you've arrived at being a woman? I mean, for example, if you're a trans woman who grew up identifying as a man, who grew up enjoying the privileges of being a man, does that take away from being a woman? Are you any less of a real woman?" Which, I hate that question.
The question was so loaded, it was so leading.
It was, well, first, loaded and leading, absolutely, but also, like, a horrible question.
And it's just a bad question. And, I mean, I think it could have been handled better, that being said.
She could have just, like, calling that reporter out, being like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
So that kind of, like, leads to Lily's question of, why are we asking a cis-hetero woman about trans women?
Yes.
To me, it kind of, it sounded like baiting, quite honestly.
Yeah. Well, I wish I knew, like, I guess I could look up more about the reporter, because, you know, who knows what that reporter feels and if they even know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When it comes to intersectional feminism.
I think it ties in two things. I think, first off, bringing up again the idea that art does not exist in a vacuum.
Right.
You are very much when you're an artist, you are very much involved in the world that you're making art in. And I think that especially for writers, have to kind of take a page out of journalists' book where, like, journalism has very much worked to adapt to language changes when they're needed. And I think the idea of specifying someone as either cis or trans when necessary, when someone is identified that way, or when someone, like when you're in this realm of conversation about what is cis and what is trans, I think that not acknowledging or not taking the opportunity to educate what the term cis means, or like not working to make it be a part of your vocabulary as someone who makes their living by using the English language, when the culture is so clearly shifting in that direction, I think that that's potentially neglectful.
Yes. I agree. Although I also think, I mean, to tackle another thing that Lily said, and I'm sure we'll go back to later.
Yeah.
I do think that she is someone who's warranted a second chance because of all the good work she's done.
Well, that, yeah.
Or
that...
maybe even a third chance because her feminism is intersectional and she's an important person as far as educating about intersectional feminism. Yeah. So we can't just throw all of that out because, but she has to learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's actually something that Lily and I discussed last night. I came to the performance late. Lily walked up to me and we had a conversation, and we were talking about, you know, basically like everybody in the process of learning about the world has said publicly, or maybe not so publicly, regretful things.
Yes.
Like, I'm sure that every person, you know, on their day, on this day in Facebook life, you know, they look back and they're like, "Bleh, can't believe I had that opinion."
Yeah, that happens to me almost every day.
Yeah. And, but the difference is we are afforded the opportunity to grow quietly.
Yeah.
And to acknowledge those mistakes quietly. The downside of being so, you know, so intensely in the public eye as Chimamanda is, she is not afforded that luxury.
No.
Of, you know, she made a regretful statement, which she has since gone back and kind of...
Yeah.
At least is making an attempt to clarify. Yes. And we're catching someone in the middle of a week where they're trying to better understand what they've said. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're hyper-analyzing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to know where she goes and what she says next, because that could say a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I also think there's something to be said about the anti-Adichie.
Yeah.
Even that article was not saying that she's a bad person. I would even go so far as to say that anyone that makes a similar mistake is not a bad person. I think that the issue is still kind of new to some people, and I think that education is not thorough all of the time and is not complete, and I think that it's not necessarily their fault or the wrongdoer's fault. And I don't necessarily think that the claims, the criticisms are necessarily blaming Adichie outside of the idea of being like, "Hey, just that you know, that thing you said was problematic and here's why."
And yes, and I think what's important to talk about here is that, I mean, this is a specific context, it's a specific person. We're taking someone who is, she wasn't trying to say, "Oh, trans people don't exist and oh, they don't have struggles."
Yeah.
Because were she that kind of feminist, I think we'd be having a very different conversation.
Right.
Whereas I think she, from what I've read and seen, is sensitive to the issues of trans people, but needs to be educated on them. So she's not just like oddly prejudiced against them, because that would be a different conversation.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, and in her clarification, she basically, her clarification that Josh and I actually, when we were reading her initial clarification, kind of had to unpack for ourselves. Basically, what she was trying to say is that cis women and trans women are all women. That she is not questioning that. They are all women. It's just that their struggles are different.
Yes.
And I don't think she's wrong.
Well, yes, because I think that it would be naive to say that someone born, you know, cisgendered, has the same experience growing up as someone trans. I think that's very naive. But it's also incredibly naive to say that a trans person, a trans female, say, grew up with male privilege.
No, and that honestly is my biggest takeaway from that.
That's interesting.
Is, well, and I, and actually, I'm before I say this.
Well,
I'm
I'd like to kind of like, is it like the idea that apples and oranges are different, but they're both fruits? Do you see what I'm saying by that? Like cis women are one thing and trans women are the other. Well, but the if let's say like apples are men and oranges are women in the very binary, like limiting sense of talking about that, it doesn't work, right?
No.
And that's, I think I almost want to say that's the problem with saying like cis women are cis women and trans women are trans women and they're both women, is like that's not, maybe that's not entirely doing service to what trans women want either. And obviously,
well,
I'm not.
Well, but if you look at it a different way, when you look at the struggles of white women and women of color,
okay,
to say that their struggles are identical would be wrong.
Absolutely.
Would be 100% wrong.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so to say that, you know, cis women and trans women have the same struggles, I think that there is an underlying, I think that all women have like a base level of struggle.
Yes.
100%. From there, I think it diverges, but and I in Chimamanda's clarification, she did say that trans women are women, and
yes,
and that and the second part of what she was saying is that in her initial statement, she did not mean to say that cis women's struggles were more important. That was one thing that she did say.
Yes.
I'm like bouncing around three different articles and an email on my phone right now. And sorry. We might cut this pause out. We might not. Who knows? Clicking a link is podcast gold. Okay. great.
Yes, good song.
Okay. Great. All right. Because saying, so she says, because saying trans and cis acknowledges that there is a distinction between women born female and women who transition without elevating one or the other. So she's saying that, although this is a little problematic in my mind, basically okay. She's saying they're separate but different.
Right.
Yeah. So was segregation.
Yeah. No. And I mean, and that is where this issue becomes difficult. It's like,
I think, and here's the white straight cis man talking.
Oh, okay.
No, you should talk. You should talk.
No.
Well, I was just gonna say, I think at a certain point you have to go like, we're not gonna figure this out.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, and we definitely aren't. But I think the best hope we can have today is to apply this to whatever as much of an analogous experience that we can, and of course we're all cis in this room, so we're never going to be able to really get down to the heart of it. But I do think, for instance, it's naive to say that just because you're a woman you've had a shared experience, no matter what kind of woman you are. You know, I mean, there is a shared, misogyny is a fact, right? And you're going to deal with that as a woman in the world, really, in any country. But if you're a woman growing up in New York versus Kansas versus Japan, your experience is going to be different. So I think it's okay to acknowledge the fact that people have different experiences, and that doesn't disclude them from being part of a larger group.
You know what? You're right. Yeah.
Because no. It's not like there's only two female experiences you can have, that being trans or that being cis. Like, the world, you know, it's far deeper than that, and it's different dependent on your race, upon where you're living, if you're where you are on the, I don't know, sexual orientation spectrum. There are so many factors and variables that I don't know. So what, when you get down to that part, how is being trans really that? I mean, different, but is it?
I mean, it's, yeah. So then should we be looking at it from an individual basis? Like, should my should like my struggle be defined by the fact that I am a white, cis, hetero, plus-sized woman versus someone who is white, cis, white, cis, hetero, like, thin woman or woman of color or trans, well, you know, yeah. Like, it should it be then defined by someone's own personal...
What? I mean, things almost have to be, right? Because I, you know, I'm gay. I'm a cis, white, gay. And, yeah, that wording was funny. But, but, so, do I, as a person, you know, a queer person in the society, do I feel marginalized? Yes. Is my experience growing up the same as someone whose family wasn't accepting? No, mine was.
Yeah.
So that, therein lies a different set of privileges and a different set of experiences, but no one would say, that I didn't have a gay experience. Whereas maybe are we trying to say that they didn't have a female experience, which right. we shouldn't be.
Yeah. Because I mean, well, and then if you, so then everybody's, I think that we can all agree that everybody's experience is different. And right, to try to homogenize the idea of the female experience being that of being born a woman, being treated less than
right.
because you're a woman for your whole life. Like that being the defining characteristic of the female experience is wrong.
Yeah.
Because there are women out there who were born men. There yeah. are women out there who were, you know, for some reason, perhaps they weren't treated less than. Maybe it was a cultural thing. Maybe it was a family thing. Who knows? Like, not everybody's experience was that homogenized, easily packaged, you know, being born a woman, being treated less than, therefore you are a woman.
I would, yes. Yes, absolutely. But I would also argue, were that for some reason to be the...
Benchmark
that we're using... I promise you, the little queer kids, you know, who are trans, were treated less than.
Absolutely.
People even, that's the incredible thing about the society, and I could go on about this for hours, actually, is that you don't have to be doing anything actively different to be treated as an other.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're a little gay boy growing up, and you don't even care about sex or feelings, you know, that kind of thing yet, because you don't... haven't gone through puberty, but people are still calling you gay and weird and stuff, but you're not doing anything, right?
Yeah.
You're not
yeah.
attracted to anyone. You're not doing anything. And people still call you out. That's...
Well,
And I promise you that that's what most trans kids... I mean, I don't want to say most. Again, we're talking about the different experiences, but that right. is that is a shared queer experience that I can talk to.
Yeah. Well, and that's what Laverne Cox was talking about in her response to Chimamanda's initial comments, was that she talked to her twin brother.
Yes.
They're same age, both born men of color. He experienced male privilege.
Yes.
And Laverne did not.
Yes. And I can speak to this too. I have a twin brother who's straight, and our experiences growing up were very different.
Yeah.
And even, but again, even before the like actually caring about men or women yeah. happened, which is what the society, you know,
yeah.
that's what we talk about. It was different, and he had a, you know, more of a like a straight male privileged existence than I did. Not to say that my experience wasn't privileged. I'm not gonna, but you know, just yeah. say there was that difference. So I completely believe it, and I think that we have to acknowledge that too. That these aren't people going through any of the privilege that cis people are.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I'm thinking about is I think the thing for me is. My general rule of thumb is, I feel like trans women aren't trying to argue the issues that cis women care about. Okay. Like, I feel like, but cis women are trying to argue the issue that trans women care about. And I know for me personally, coming from the perspective I do, I try to go by the rule of, like, let's talk about everybody's issues and not exclude someone's issues. And so I think the reason why... it makes sense to be trans inclusive is because it doesn't affect anyone besides trans people, the issues that trans people care about. Does that make sense?
In a way, so like basically giving a trans person, like having trans rights and having trans, you know, inclusivity in aspect, in most, you know, in all as not most, all okay, aspects of yeah. life.
If trans people were going around going like, women should be making 70 cents on the dollar, then I would be like, then trans issues is a no?
I was thinking more, how about... It's possibly a better analogous situation that my gay marriage doesn't affect your straight marriage.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, right? Yeah.
I think that's the point you're making. Is that
yeah, yeah, is yeah, that's a much is better people, version of yeah. what I'm trying to make. Yeah.
Okay, good. So ultimately, what trans rights is what so many rights fights are about, which is just treat us like humans, you know?
Yeah.
And so ultimately... treating a trans person like a human isn't going to devalue your humanity for some right. odd, you know.
Right. So.
It's going to make you more of a human?
So there's a part of Lily's question that I want to touch on. What if she had said, I don't know enough about this topic to speak about it?
I think that would have been good.
I think that would have been better.
I think that would have been great. I think it's really good to acknowledge when you don't know how to speak to a topic. And I don't think that would have devalued her work as a feminist. But especially if afterwards she said, you know, hey, I don't know enough. I want to learn.
Yeah.
Well, and then there was the second part of that was, would she have been raked through the coals for not picking up the trans ally flag and running with it when she had the platform to do so? I think that was what she was attempting to do. No, I don't even think she was. I think that she was stating a misinformed opinion. But I think that it would have been better for her to say, I don't know about this topic, but here are 10 activists who you can talk to about that.
That would be great, because I think it's okay. I think it's impossible for one person to tackle every topic every time they speak about everything. And we sometimes expect that of people.
As evidenced by this conversation.
Yes,
right. I mean, like, we are, like, my shoulders are at my ears right now.
I feel like we're stumbling through a minefield.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I before we go any further, like, I'm sure that we've said things that are not the best.
I'm positive.
Yeah.
I'm sure I have.
and we want to be told that, because the fact is, you know, obviously not to the extent that Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie has been facing, but like we are putting this on the internet. We are asking people to listen to it. We are, you know, we are publicly stating our opinion, which puts us in a much smaller ballpark, but a similar ballpark to her comments. Mm-hmm. So if we are saying something that makes us sound like complete assholes, we want to learn.
Yeah.
We want to learn.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely the case.
Go ahead.
Oh, no,
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I was talking about the fact that, okay, so kind of in the society right now, we demand from people, to kind of address everything every time they talk about anything. You know, so if you bring up how you're raising money for earthquake victims, people will say, but what about the veterans? You know, there's no way in discourse now to not have to address it. Now, of course, that's not exactly a great analogy to what we're talking about now, because trans women are women and women's liberation rights is women's, you know, that includes.
Yeah.
But I think that her point of view is so valid and so informed by her experiences, and talk as a woman of color experiencing feminism is such an important, valid viewpoint. And she's never going to be the source to talk about the experience of trans women, because she's not one.
Yeah.
Should she inform herself about that? Yes.
Yes.
I think that'd be good. And I think that'd be important.
And quickly.
Yeah. But I never think that she's going to be the voice, and nor should she be.
No.
Of trans women in intersectional feminism. She should just acknowledge that it's there, and, you know, she worked towards that, of course.
Absolutely. Which is why I resent that reporter asking her in particular that question.
Yeah.
Because that is not her wheelhouse.
No.
Mm-hmm. It would be like asking me, an opera singer, to speak on the process of a musical theater performer.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know their experience.
No.
I am familiar with it because I have friends who are in that field, but I am not a part of that field. I did not grow up. I did not go through that track.
Right.
I have no idea what it takes to be a musical theater performer because I am an opera singer.
Yes. Yeah.
So to ask a cis hetero woman of color about the struggles and the detailed platform of the trans community is ridiculous. I mean, and in that case, I think that it was her responsibility to be like, I really can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel for that community. I stand by that community. But in terms of, you know, my personal experience with it, I just know what my allies, you know, as an ally, I know what people have said.
So we've already like ran through 40 minutes, which is awesome, but I know that there was one other topic that we wanted to talk about, so I would, if it's cool with you guys, I would love to basically open this up to discussion.
Yeah, I think
we're going to post both the articles. Mm-hmm. Did we say that on the show during the recording?
We're going to post the articles, and then I also want to post the article explaining her clarification.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll
post that on, when we post it on Facebook, we'll post it there, and feel free to use the entire common thread for that episode as a discussion for this.
And to, if we're being assholes.
Yeah, please.
Oh yeah, tell us.
Genuinely, please tell us. You know, like, don't stop listening. If we're being assholes, tell us we're being assholes.
Yeah. And also do write in. Thank you so much, Lily, for writing
in.
Thank you,
that's
Lily.
Really cool. I love that we like got to have a really great conversation about it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Write in.
Yeah, please. Do write in.
scoppymag@gmail.com.
So the next thing I really wanted to talk about was something that really annoys me, and it kind of runs into this idea of language and the need to adopt language and not adopt but adapt language. And it's for me, obviously, I don't think the effects of what annoys me about it affects me, but it's something that still bothers me all the same. Just because it's something that I've tried to adapt into the way I talk, into the way that I think, and mm-hmm. it's the idea of certain words that are very diminutive towards minorities. Obviously, there's the very clear one, the N word but the one that really has been getting me lately is the B word,
which I will say.
Thank you.
We're talking about the word bitch.
Yeah, and I find that there are a lot of men, especially. It's usually not. I mean, of course, there are horrible sexist, like, terrible men that use the word and are trying to do it in a way that is terrible. But then there's also, like, kind-hearted, nice, like, you know, nerd-type people, caring about the arts-type people that use the word to be funny, to, you know, I don't know. Like, it's like a punchline or something like that, and I just think that's really problematic, and I think it's really entirely punching down. And I think if you read the room, anytime that happens, like, every woman cringes, and it's not funny. It's not endearing. You don't seem cool for doing it. What?
Nothing.
Nothing. You're good.
No.
You keep going.
Well, it really bothers me, and I think that if you're not a woman, you don't get to use the word. And I like, that's just genuinely how I feel about it. And
yeah.
And you just don't. And I think women then can use the word. And I've, you know, when we first met, we had this conversation, and I was like, you of course have every right to use the word. You have the right to try to, what's the word for making it acceptable? Reappropriate the word to do that if you want to. But I think that in a lot of cases, it can be more hurtful than it is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so and actually, it popped up on my news, my This Day in Facebook Eunice. Like, I posted something. A colleague of mine in Milwaukee had advanced through the Met Council audition.
Nice, yeah.
And I posted a selfie that we had taken together. And the first thing I wrote, I started the post by saying, "This bitch."
Right.
Which, like, to me...
Which, like, fair. I mean, for you to say
whatever. No. But what I'm saying is that, like, I look at that now, because I've, you know, had nothing to do with you telling
no.
me. Because it's not like you told me to stop saying it, but that I did some soul searching and was like, I don't feel great about that word. And so, like, whenever I see, and I used it a lot. Yeah. I used it a lot. And I think a lot of people use it a lot. Yes. And I think it's akin to, like, in the 70s and 80s, people using gay as an insult.
Yeah.
In the 70s and 80s?
Well, you know, and onward. Well, I think it's less so. My entire childhood?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's less so now. I think that
I think it's, it is... It's probably less so, although, God, anytime like a school-age group of children is around, I still hear it.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Yeah. In another series of Daniel feeling very uncomfortable about a thing and not being completely knowledgeable.
Yeah.
The one that's always difficult for me is the person, if I know a gay man that uses it, and I always go like, I don't feel great about that, but also
if
like...
If they use gay as a diminutive?
Oh, no.
The B word.
If they use the B
word. Oh, I hate it.
Okay, yeah.
No, because, well, okay. First of all, well, because, this hasn't...
it's tricky, though, because I feel like people can use it to men as an insult to, like, insult them for being feminine.
Yes, and so that's the whole problem, because I'm going to use the word, sorry, so we use the word bitch as kind of an insult to femininity, ultimately, right? Because we're not often calling... Straight men will be called a bitch if they're chickening out of something.
Yeah.
And that's the only circumstance. Gay men are called a bitch when they're being catty, and women are called a bitch... When they're being a woman. Yeah.
When they wake up in the morning.
When they wake up in the morning. So I think that, I mean, like, so gay men using it to each other, I mean, it's its own issue and we can get into that. I'm kind of okay with it as a reappropriation, but kind of not. In general, my rule of thumb is, and I don't like using that word to describe other men myself or women or anyone. I just don't like using that word. And I used to use it a lot, too. And one day I said, this is ridiculous. Just call everyone an asshole.
Yeah.
And to that day, because it's so easy to say, oh, Daniel's being an asshole. Maureen was being a total bitch. No, they were both being assholes.
Yeah. No. It's really not that different.
But that even that little change, just like, oh, now I see the, you know, it really is awful misogyny to...
Yeah.
The problem is it's a product of the patriarchy. And
yes.
If you use it, you're cooperating in that. And it doesn't... I mean, there are obviously really great feminists that women, progressives that use it and use it for comedic effect or use it to make a really great political statement or whatever. And that's... one thing I think, and not something at all I would like to comment on or have an opinion on. And so when I'm talking about it, I'm not talking about that. I'm mostly talking about straight men. And I will say that although I don't entirely feel like I have the like I'm the license to feel this way, I will say that I do feel uncomfortable when gay men say it too. And
I think that men saying it is what gives a problem.
I think I could speak to that too, in that there is a problem of misogyny within the gay community, so it would go, you know,
hand in hand.
So let's even just erase my appropriation comments beforehand. Yeah, gay men probably shouldn't use it because there's already a rampant problem of misogyny in the gay community.
Yeah. No,
you're right.
Sorry, and I also don't mean to like...
No, I mean, again, I said I don't like using the word either, so...
Yeah.
No, I think it was a good point.
Yeah, and, like, I think that conversations that cause discomfort and, like, involve calling, you know, taking to task people that we love and care about to be more accepting, I think that it goes back to our conversation of the role of an ally.
Sure.
I, as a woman... have difficulty calling out men if a man were to call me a bitch, my immediate reaction would be fuck you.
Yeah.
Whereas if a man were around me and a man called me a bitch, he might have the clarity of mind and the, in that moment, not feeling like their identity was being smeared to be like, hey man, super offensive.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it also kind of ties into the idea of like, I don't think women feel like they have the license to say that this is something that is a problem. Like, I think that I think, like, if you can, and in no way want to equate the struggles of race to the struggles of gender, because that's a whole other Jesus Christ. Like, I'm already feeling my shoulders tensing up and being I'm walking into a minefield.
Well, no, I think that these conversations are important to have. Yeah. And I think that stating what possibly a blind spot in your worldview is important. Yeah. And I think that airing it out and talking about it with people who you trust and who love you is important.
Well, anyway, so my point is, I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that it's not as easy for women to say this is something that shouldn't be done than it is for, like, there's such a recourse when someone uses the N-word. Like, it's so clearly, like, you're going to get punched in the face.
Right.
And I think even that has a really gendered thought to it of, like, who's punching you in the face? Like, a big, strong black guy.
Yeah.
That's the thought. Like, as a white guy, I'm saying that is the immediate thought that comes to a racist's head. Is like, this is what's going to happen if I do this. And it's so, there's so much less of a threat when using it. Because what's going to happen? Like, the sexist immediate thought is you'll get slapped in the face. And that, even the thought, the difference between a punch and a slap is entirely gendered and is so indicative to me of the problem with the whole thing, where it's just like, fuck it, man, just don't do any of it. Don't say either word. And like, get over it. Like, you get over the fact that you can't use the N-word and you can't use the B-word. Like, there's so many other things you can do. Like, you can go be successful and be a CEO of any company you want to. Like, don't fucking say the words, because it's not... Use the F-word. Use the asshole. Use asshole. Like, they're great. Other great... There's a fucking colorful world of dirty language that you can use.
Now, doesn't hurt other people's feelings. Clarify for Daniel. When he said F word, he meant fuck. Because if you use the word faggot, I will find you. And I will kill you. Unless you're another gay, then do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. We've only got a couple minutes left, so I want you guys to entirely have, like, final thoughts. And I'll stop everything at 55 and we'll do our thanks for listening stuff.
Okay. So, in regards to Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's comments, I think she was wrong. I think that she was misinformed. It was one of the main tenets of the semi-pro Adichie article that Lily sent us, was that is extolling the virtues of saying I don't know. And that it's okay to say, I don't know. And I think in that case, the trans community... I'm not going to speak for the trans community. I think that if a man were asked a question about feminism and he had said, I don't know, I will put it in a topic I can personally speak to.
Perfect.
If a man were asked a question about feminism and he said, I don't know because I have not lived that experience, I would have been like, good for him.
Yeah.
So I think that she should have just said, I don't know, and then quickly gone and educated herself.
Yeah.
You know, as I think all allies should do. I think that they should speak, you know, when asked questions like that, they should speak hard facts that they know that have been proven. Mm-hmm. And then for any opinions that they may be, any speculation should not be done by an ally.
Yeah. I think that, I think maybe we just have to hold off making some kind of final judgment on her opinion, because I think we can make a judgment that this was a misstep and we all see it, but what does she do now? And I think that that's what's going to be important. And I don't think we throw all of her good work and opinions out.
Of course.
And I don't think anyone's really calling for that either. But I think it's important to say, okay, this happened. So now what are you going to do? What are you going to say about it? And are you going to educate yourself? Are you going to help educate others? Are you going to, you know, what are you going to do? And I think that I respect her. So I'm hoping that she'll make some good decisions going forward.
I think she's smart. I think that she has the ability and the desire to be a better ally. And I hope that she further clarifies her point to basically be like, I don't know what I'm talking about. Please, trans community, I would like to understand. I would like to have a more informed opinion on this.
And that's what being a good ally,
you know, absolutely
is.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. This has been Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And I'm Joshua Smith.
This has been Questionable Internet Opinions. If you like what you've heard...
Or didn't like what you heard.
Quite frankly.
Let us know. Reach out. You can email us at scoppymag@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook under Scoppy Magazine. That's our page. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Scoppy Mag, S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. I think that's my stuff, right?
Yeah. So I am going to emphasize the importance of donations. And this time I'm going to say not only to us. I think that in this time where, marginalized organizations, arts organizations are coming under fire, I think it's important that people with the ability to do so should put their money where their mouth is. Mm-hmm. If you believe strongly in a cause, you should support that cause. And you can do that in a variety of ways. You can volunteer. We've had several people on our podcast talking about protest concerts that they're funding. Mm-hmm. We've got Musical Activists of Chicago. We've got Chicago Actors Call to Action. We have Emma Cox, who is... you know, putting on her concert at the Underground.
I'm singing in that, so I'm trying to.
You're singing in that?
Oh, I didn't tell you yet.
No,
I'm singing in that. Very excited.
Well, Emma Cox came over for dinner on Sunday night, and that was really fun.
Yeah,
to like be friends.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Oh, she's awesome.
She's good people.
Yeah.
Shout out to Emma Cox.
Anyway, her concert is going up. Go to those concerts. Support those artists. You know, make your voice heard. Be
Musical
vocal.
Musical Activists of Chicago is, I think, this weekend or next.
It's Saturday,
I think.
Yeah, theirs is the 18th. Emma's is the 25th.
Yeah, so it's the 25th. It's 8 p.m. at the Underground Wonder Bar on Clark Street, North Clark Street.
Yeah, go support those people. They are doing good work. But also, if you love what we're doing, if you want us to continue, you know, answering questions, discussing uncomfortable topics, and talking to interesting people and doing even more than that, please donate. Mm-hmm. We want to expand our reach. We want to be doing more, but you can't do that without your help. So you can head to scoppymag.com, go to our about section. You can become a subscriber or do a one-time donation. If you become a subscriber, we'll give you a shout out on the show. If you do a one-time donation, we will send you a handwritten thank you note. Mm-hmm. Give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
I just want to say you can donate for as little as $5 a month. And I will say that in the light of the current world and in our personal lives, like, things are difficult, making it work, paying rent and all these things. It means the world to know that you guys support us. And it gives us a glimmer of hope that this podcast is actually something that people want and people need, and it's valuable. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
And if you want to help get the word out, besides just sharing, you can rate and comment on iTunes.
Yeah, you can.
It's a great way to help us get found.
I actually just fixed iTunes. There have been a few people that have been like, I can only find the 10 most recent episodes on your thing. And I figured it out. I had to go into WordPress. It's a very complicated way to get podcasts up on the internet for free. You have to use like 4 different channels. And one of those channels wasn't entirely correct. So I fixed it. You can now find all of our episodes on iTunes, all of the last 23.
We're at 23 episodes?
We are at 23 episodes.
Woo! Oh my God.
Yeah. And thank you all so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.